Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. And stop me if you've heard this one before. Man starts technology company with good intentions. Company does some useful and convenient, but also destabilizing things. It skirts local laws, squeezes labor, puts competitors out of business, and then jacks up prices. Man gets rich. Society is collateral. It's a tale as old as time, at least, you know, a couple decades of time, and permeates the tech world. It's also a story that investigative reporter and economist Loretta Napoleoni laments in her new book, Technocapitalism, The Rise of the New Robber Barons and the Fight for the Common Good. Napoleoni examines tech titans, whom she argues have used technology to become massively wealthy at a high cost to most of the rest of us. She argues that these tech moguls have found success by capitalizing on the confusion and anxiety intrinsic in what she dubs the future present. You know, the era we now live in. When we talked recently, I asked Napoleoni why she coined a new term for our current reality.
We are living in the present, but in reality, we're already in the future. And this is because technology moves so fast. Technological innovation is so fast. The speed is unbearable for human beings. So you're always behind. There is always something that you need to learn. So in terms of time, so what in the past took a decade today can take, you know, less than a year, but also is changing every single aspect of life. So it's not only transportation. So let's say, you know, the combustion engine, you know, of course, you know, it was a technological revolution in terms of industrial production and also transportation, but that's about it. You know, it didn't affect health, it didn't affect education, it didn't affect politics. At least not directly. But here we live in a world that's changing constantly. And also the technology updates itself constantly. So even if you know how to use, let's say, Skype, for example, even if you know how to use Skype, then all of a sudden one day you open it up and, you know, they've changed completely. But because it happens so quickly and because we're not used to technological change or technology per se, then, you know, we feel this anxiety of never, ever being on top of it.
You write that there are people who are best positioned and able to ride these rapid waves of change, and they have reaped great rewards. Those are the tech titans. Who are the tech titans? I mean, who are we talking about? I think I can guess, but why is that an important classification to you to really identify this class of people?
Well, I call them titans, tech titans, because, you know, they're almost gods. I mean, they're not like us. They are in a completely, they live in a completely different dimension. They're
Zuckerberg, Musk, Larry Page,
yes,
you know, et cetera.
All of them, yeah. You know, I think, you know, they're defined as the founders, the founders of this new era, the founders of, you know, this, the technological revolution. But I call them titans because they're so distant from us. Their life is so different from our life. And they move, you know, in a world that is well, well above, you know, our world. So they are the only people that I think, you know, they're not living in the present future. They're actually living in the future constantly. And they don't have this anxiety that we have. Now, that creates a big divide between the masses and this very, very small group of people. And I'm concerned about that. I mean, not because they're capitalists and capitalism is bad, absolutely not. But I'm concerned about that because this detachment from reality produces distortions that affect our daily life. And because they also live so far away from us, they have no idea, really. I don't want to think that they don't care, but I think they have no idea of the impact of what they're doing upon us. Mm.
I've heard it said by people who cover Silicon Valley that a certain number of these people have been surrounded by folks telling them they are geniuses and giving them what they want for so long that they do lose touch with what reality actually is. I mean, do you find that compelling?
Yeah, I do, actually. I believe that. Yeah. But I think there is a major difference between them and the high finance of the 1990s. See, I think, you know, the high finance of the 1990s really didn't care. I mean, they wanted to make money, money, money. And I think this group of tech titans started in the right way. I mean, how did Facebook actually came about? If you think about, you know, Facebook came about through connectivity, which is, you know, one of the most important things of the human race. We have survived being an extremely, extremely weak species because of connectivity, because we got together. So we realized that alone we couldn't survive, but in a group we had better chances. And if you think about the idea of Facebook, it is to connect people. So people within a tribe, which was, of course, you know, Harvard University, so that, you know, they can connect. But then Facebook became a completely different thing.
Yeah, now it's no longer about connectivity. No. It's about selling our data and finding
Absolutely.
Ways to monetize our data.
Yeah, but it was not born for this purpose. So one could say it is a degeneration of the original idea. So that's why I think that this detachment has caused most of the negativity that we see today in technology and technological innovation.
What's your read on recent antitrust activity in the U.S.? I mean, we see the FTC going after Amazon. Of course, there's an ongoing case the Justice Department has against Google and its anti-competitive practices to dominate search. Do you think that the efforts to kind of kickstart regulation here, A, are going to be effective, and B, are they necessary long term to kind of wrest a sense of a balanced playing field out of what's really become a monopolistic type scenario?
I mean, the first problem is these people are so rich that they can pay any possible fine, as we've seen anyway. So, I mean, first limitation. The second limitation is the globalization of the market. So, you know, you may limit them here, but then, you know, they will go somewhere else and do exactly the same thing. So unless, you know, you have a global effort to contain them, and also, you know, to have an antitrust legislation that basically, you know, breaks these monopolies, you can't possibly go after them. So we're almost beyond the point in which the traditional legislation is going to work. So the next step will be nationalization, which is, you know, a word that you cannot possibly pronounce, and nobody wants to go down that avenue. But, you know, I can see 10 years from now, if we don't do something, that may be the only possible alternative. So
is there like a middle ground where it's treated like a utility? These certain large tech companies regulated like utilities, but maybe not still privately owned?
Okay, so what is technology? That's the key question. I mean, to me, after doing all this work and this research, technology, it is really a product of humanity. So it is like the water of the planet, of the air that we breathe. So from that point of view, it's like saying, okay, you know, which company can bottle air and sell it? I think we're not there yet for people realizing that. But if you think about, without technology today, our society will come to a halt. You will not be able to have a banking system functioning. You wouldn't be able to have kids learning in school anymore. So it's not only a matter of communication, entertainment. It's actually a matter of, you know, life. I mean, soon we'll have artificial intelligence applied to the health system that will be able to detect cancer before, you know, doctors can do that. So how do you define that?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the main philosophical issue, is How do you define technology? Okay, it's true that all of these individuals, these tech titans, are the one who brought it to the forefront of our life. But, you know, let's go to the origins of technology. And technology is a product of humanity, a product of the human brain, and should be used for the common good.
Let's talk about AI. You've broached the subject. This is probably the biggest disruptor that's already here. I usually say on the horizon, but it's already here. What do you make so far of what we've seen for AI's potential and also the dangers that it presents in terms of displacing workers, displacing major industries? You mentioned medical capabilities. I was just reading a ChatGPT 4 study on ophthalmology and the fact that ChatGPT is performing as good as the best specialists yes. in these multiple choice tests to identify different eye abnormalities and potential eye diseases. I mean, and this is such early days in its applications in medicine and beyond. You know, what do you make about what we're seeing already and the major pitfalls that we will be facing as this thing just continues to flourish?
It's all a matter of how AI is going to be used. And again, this is a matter that refers to society and the state. We cannot have private companies in charge of something like that. I think, you know, the application of AI to the medical field is fantastic. There's been recently in the UK, for example, a couple of cases of women with breast cancer that were detected by AI before, you know, any human eye could see them. So, you know, they were detected, they were, you know, addressed and operated right away. So, you know, two lives saved, but also a massive saving in terms of the costs, you know, of national health if these two cases were not caught right at the beginning. The problem is that the money are not going to this kind of research because, you know, profits are not coming from that area. Profits are coming from the application. At the moment, profits are coming from the application of AI to warfare. Now, we have a completely different class of machine, the intelligent arms. They are now being used both in the Ukraine and in Gaza. They're experimenting with the new form of warfare.
Identifying targets, things like that.
Yeah, identified targets, for example. But they're experimenting in this way, producing a new form of warfare whereby the war is going to be fought between the machines, so intelligent machine, and the civilian population. So we're not having combatants anymore. We're not having soldiers. So, I mean, that is, I find it abysmal. I think it's a degeneration of war, which, of course, will change completely the approach that the military has to war. Because, I mean, if you don't have casualties, if you don't have so many military casualties, that changes also the attitude that, you know, the army has towards war. So, I mean, we're seeing, you know, really, really mega, mega metamorphosis in that field because this is where the money can be made. I mean, the arm industry is booming. It's absolutely booming. So why are we doing that? We're doing that because if the rule of the game is profit, of course makes sense. But the rule of the game should not be profits, should actually be to benefit humanity, so to improve our lives. I mean, that is what technology should really do. But that's not happening.
I just want to close by asking you about space, because space is something you're very optimistic about, surprising, yes, as long as you don't see it, the space exploration and advancements being held in the hands of too many, like, singular rich people. Right now we have, you know, Blue Origins and SpaceX and these techno barons, techno capitalists that are, pretty stepping out and controlling a good amount of that right now. And you kind of see the retrenchment of at least the U.S. government's investment in space. But why are you optimistic about space, Loretta?
Well, I'm not optimistic about space in general. I do not think, as I say in the book, that we'll ever go and colonize Mars for many reasons, including the fact that our body cannot possibly survive in space. But I'm optimistic about the low Earth orbit because there are enormous potentials there because of technology. I mean, in the book there is the example of China that is building this huge solar plant in space that we will be able to give energy to the entire China. And of course, I'm pretty sure that harvesting the solar energy from the low Earth orbits can give energy to the entire planet, our planet. So I'm optimistic about all of that, providing, of course, that the direction is going to be in the interest of the common good, i.e., for example, energy for the planet. But at the moment, what the tech titans that have become the space barons are doing is actually using the low Earth orbit for information. So, they provide you satellite internet, and this, through this satellite internet, they mine, our data, which is still, the most powerful and rich resource that we have today.
Loretta Napoleoni is the author of Techno-Capitalism, The Rise of the New Robber Barons and the Fight for the Common Good. Loretta, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m., Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.